Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social.
Last week, we walked through Johnny Depp's version of what he says happened behind closed doors during one of Hollywood's most public and bitter marriages. A divorce that played out under fame, scrutiny, and relentless attention. The case is back in the news since Amber has participated in a documentary called Silenced, which just premiered at the Sundance Film Festival this past January. We heard the evidence Johnny Depp's legal team presented, arguing that Amber Heard's op-ed falsely implied he was abusive and caused devastating harm to his career, his reputation, and his personal life. Now, we turn to the other side. This episode is not a rebuttal to Johnny Depp's testimony. It's not a point-by-point argument. And it's not a debate about who suffered more during or after the marriage. This episode is the explanation. Because in a defamation lawsuit, the defense's case becomes very narrow. They only need to answer one central question. Why did the person who published the statements believe them to be true at the time she wrote them? For Amber Heard, that explanation is the heart of this trial. The plaintiff's attorneys describe defamation as holding someone accountable for their words. But according to Amber Heard, this case was not about accountability. It was about retaliation. She told the jury that what the world saw was a celebrity divorce, but what she lived was something very different. A relationship shaped by power, fear, and control, hidden behind fame and influence. Amber testified that when she spoke out about abuse, her credibility, her motives, and even her memories were placed on trial simply because she spoke up. She described feeling the full force of a culture that punishes women who speak up and that something needed to change. She wrote about that experience in an op-ed published by the Washington Post, advocating for social change. But now, she says, speaking out made her the one on trial. This week, we examine the relationship through a different lens. As Amber Heard presents her side, the jury is left to decide whether her words crossed a legal line or whether they were protected because she believed they were true. The plaintiff says the allegations were false, defamatory, and cost him everything. The defense says her words were truthful, protected by law, and she shouldn't be silenced. But it's the jurors who have the final say. This is the 13th Juror Podcast, where we break down real court cases and put you in the juror's seat. Two sides, the same evidence. You decide what to believe. I'm your host, Brandi Churchwell. Today's episode is Johnny Depp versus Amber Heard, Part 2, The Defense. From the very beginning, the defense made it clear that this case would hang on just two questions. First, were the statements in the op-ed true? And if they were not true, did Amber Heard believe they were true when she published them? That was it. The defense told jurors that everything they were about to hear, every witness, every photograph, every recording, existed solely to answer those questions. Amber's attorney said this case was not about a marriage. And it was not about relitigating a divorce. They told jurors it was about why Amber spoke when she did and what she intended to say. According to the defense, Amber did not speak publicly for years. And when she finally did, she was not naming names or detailing acts of abuse. She was describing an experience, what it felt like, she said, to face backlash after speaking out and how institutions respond when powerful men are accused of wrongdoing. The defense emphasized that the op-ed published in the Washington Post was not designed to maliciously target Johnny Depp or recount the details of their relationship. They told the jury it contained no specific allegations, no dates, and no descriptions of violence. It didn't even have Johnny's name. Instead, they argued, it used Amber's experience of public backlash to advocate for broader social change. According to the defense, Johnny Depp was not a victim of defamation, but an ex-husband consumed by resentment and determined to punish Amber for speaking at all. They argued that any damage to his career was the result of his own conduct, not her words, and that he should take responsibility for the consequences of his actions rather than blaming her. The defense told jurors they would hear a very different version of what happened behind closed doors. Based on the evidence and testimony they presented, this is the defense's story. Amber Heard grew up in Texas, in a family where she learned early to be self-reliant. As a teenager, she spent time breaking horses, an experience her attorneys highlighted as formative. She told the jury that working with large, unpredictable animals taught her not to show fear, not to become intimidated, and to stay calm under pressure. The defense would later argue that those lessons shaped how she carried herself in difficult situations, including her relationship with Johnny Depp. Amber left school at 16, earned her GED early, and began supporting herself through a series of odd jobs while pursuing work in entertainment. At 17, she moved to Los Angeles after scheduling a meeting with an agent and had lived there ever since. Her acting career developed gradually through small roles and independent projects until years later when she was cast opposite Johnny Depp in The Rum Diary, the project where their paths would ultimately intersect and where the relationship at the center of this trial began. In her testimony, Amber described the early stages of her relationship with Johnny as intense and consuming. She told the jury that she was drawn in quickly by his charisma, his creativity, and the way he made her feel seen and understood. At first, she said, the relationship felt deeply romantic and private, insulated from the outside world. But according to Amber, the first cracks appeared not through physical violence, but through volatility. She testified that Johnny's mood could shift suddenly, often tied, she said, to substance use. Moments of affection, she told jurors, could turn into arguments without warning. She described walking on eggshells, never quite sure which version of him she would encounter. Amber testified that disagreements escalated quickly, and that when Johnny became angry, he could become verbally aggressive, yelling, breaking objects, and creating an environment she found frightening. She said these moments were often followed by apologies and remorse, reinforcing a cycle that made it difficult for her to leave. According to Amber, she tried to manage those situations by staying calm, by not showing fear, and by de-escalating, something her attorneys tied back to her upbringing and the lessons she said she learned growing up. She told the jury that she believed she could help Johnny, that the relationship could stabilize, and that the intense lows were the cost of equally intense highs. But over time, Amber said the unpredictability became more frequent and the emotional toll heavier. What began as passion, she said, started to feel like control. And those early warning signs would eventually give way to something far more serious. According to Amber, the first time Johnny became physically violent happened early in their relationship, over something that, at the time, seemed almost trivial. She testified that Johnny had a tattoo on his arm that originally read Winona Forever, which had later been altered to read Wino Forever. One day, Amber said she asked him about the tattoo because the letters ran together and she couldn't clearly make out what it said. When Johnny told her it said Wino, she laughed, believing he was joking. She testified that the laugh was not meant to mock him. She expected him to laugh too. Instead, she told the jury, Johnny slapped her across the face. Still trying to process what was happening, she said she laughed again, only for him to strike her again. Amber testified that she froze, stunned and unsure how to react. Then, she said, he hit her a third time, hard enough that she lost her balance and fell to the floor. She told the jury that she remembers lying on the carpet and noticing how dirty it was, an oddly vivid detail that stayed with her. In that moment, she said she realized there was no coming back from what had just happened. She said she realized something fundamental had changed, and she knew instinctively that what had just happened crossed a line. Amber became emotional as she described this incident, telling the jury she wished she had stood up for herself or walked away, but she didn't. She testified that Johnny then broke down, crying and apologizing. She said he dropped to his knees, promised it would never happen again, and told her he had put what he called, quote, the monster away. Amber said she didn't respond. She walked to her car, sat there without starting it, and tried to process what had just happened before eventually driving home. According to Amber, that moment changed how she understood the relationship. She testified that afterward, Johnny apologized repeatedly, bought her gifts, and promised the violence was over. She said she wanted to believe him, and so she stayed. Amber told the jury that throughout 2012, the volatility escalated. She described arguments that she said turned physical, testifying that Johnny would punch walls behind her, shove her, pull her by the hair, strike her in the face, and push her to the ground while accusing her of infidelity. She testified that she believed these incidents were closely tied to his drinking. She told jurors that the relationship moved between conflict and reconciliation. Intense arguments followed by apologies, remorse, and renewed closeness. At times, she said, things felt calm, especially during periods she believed coincided with his sobriety. But by March of 2013, she testified, he began drinking again, triggering what she described as nearly a month of constant fighting. Amber Heard testified over 4 days. She described incidents in multiple locations, including a hotel room where she said she was shoved into furniture and struck in the face. Another where she testified Johnny backhanded her while wearing rings, and moments where she said he slammed her against walls while accusing her of infidelity. According to Amber, these incidents were not isolated. They accumulated, she said, leaving her constantly on edge. Despite what she described as escalating violence, the relationship continued to move forward. Amber testified that in January of 2014, Johnny proposed to her in London. To Amber, the engagement reflected her belief that Johnny could still change and their relationship could still be saved. Plans were made, trips were scheduled, public appearances continued. And beneath those outward signs of commitment, Amber testified, the relationship continued, unresolved, volatile, and increasingly difficult to escape. As their relationship moved forward, Amber testified that Johnny's behavior began to extend into other parts of her life, particularly her work. According to Amber, Johnny became increasingly controlling, questioning her about movie roles, auditions, and co-stars. She testified that he accused her of seeking out roles for the wrong reasons and expressed anger over romantic scenes involving other actors. Amber told the jury that she felt pressured to justify her career choices and, at times, to limit opportunities altogether in order to avoid conflict. In one example, Amber discusses Johnny's jealousy intensifying after she accepted a movie role to film with James Franco. Amber testified that Johnny hated James Franco, and he became convinced that Amber was having an affair with him. Amber said the arguments about Franco were frequent and volatile, and that Johnny's anger over the situation escalated into both verbal abuse and physical confrontations. She described one incident on a private flight where she said Johnny became so enraged that he aggressively kicked her after an argument about Franco escalated. Amber told the jury she felt humiliated, saying no one intervened or asked if she was okay. She testified that afterward, there was no acknowledgement, no discussion, and no apology, just silence. According to Amber, moments like this were absorbed into what she said had become the reality of their relationship, where extreme incidents were followed by normalization, allowing things to continue as if nothing had happened. From her perspective, the accusations surrounding Franco were not isolated disagreements. She testified that they were emblematic of a broader pattern, one in which suspicion, possessiveness, and rage were used to exert control and keep her in a constant state of fear. Amber told the jury that by the time the relationship ended, what she experienced went far beyond arguments. She testified that the abuse took many forms: emotional, physical, and at times, sexual, and that those experiences shaped how she perceived her role as a survivor. Amber testified that Johnny's jealousy sometimes escalated into episodes she found deeply invasive and humiliating. She described one incident during a trip when Johnny became convinced she was hiding something from him, specifically drugs. According to her testimony, he accused her of concealing cocaine and tore her dress while searching her. Amber told the jury that Johnny said he was going to perform a cavity search, insisting he was looking for drugs that she said she had no reason to hide. She testified that he then inserted his fingers inside her while she stood there, stunned and unsure how to react. Heard said she had taken mushrooms that night while Johnny had been using cocaine, and she described feeling confused, scared, and disconnected from what was happening. According to Amber, the following day unfolded as if nothing had occurred. Amber also described in detail to the jury what is arguably one of the most serious and most contested incidents discussed during the entire trial. It occurred in March of 2015 while she and Johnny were in Australia, where he was filming Pirates of the Caribbean. When Johnny testified about the incident in Australia, he described the scene as Amber becoming enraged and throwing liquor bottles, one of which severed the tip of his finger, an injury that required production of the movie he was filming to halt while he sought medical treatment. Amber, however, gave a very different version of events. Amber testified that the argument quickly escalated, which she attributed to Johnny's drinking and use of drugs. She said his behavior became increasingly erratic and violent. And while she admits she did smash a liquor bottle, she said Johnny walked throughout the house smashing objects and screaming accusations at her, and then physically assaulted her as she tried to move away. Amber testified that during the chaos, Johnny sexually assaulted her with a liquor bottle. She told the jury she was terrified, confused, and in pain, and that she believed the assault could seriously injure her. She said she did not scream or fight back, explaining that she was focused on surviving the moment and getting out safely. According to Amber, the violence continued for hours, leaving the home in disarray. She testified that afterward, she was left trying to piece together what had happened, both physically and emotionally, while also trying to protect Johnny and maintain the appearance that everything was fine. For Amber, the Australia incident was not just another argument. She told the jury it was a moment that crystallized the reality of the physical and emotional abuse she says she was living with, and why, years later, she believed the statements she published about sexual violence and institutional protection were true. After Australia, it seemed whatever hope Amber once had for stability was gone. It was as if fear, not reconciliation, had become the defining feature of their marriage. According to Amber, she felt trapped between protecting Johnny and protecting herself. The marriage that she believed was going to be her happily ever after would last only 15 months. Amber testified that the final meeting between them occurred in May of 2016 at their Los Angeles penthouse. They hadn't seen each other for nearly a month, but Johnny's mother had just died, and she said he asked to see her, telling her he needed his wife and he wanted to talk. Amber said she felt torn, but ultimately agreed to let him come over. According to Amber, Johnny arrived that evening appearing intoxicated, but coherent. And at first, the conversation was calm. That changed, she testified, when he began fixating on the feces left in their bed weeks earlier. Amber said she tried to explain that it wasn't her, but Johnny continued to dwell on it, growing increasingly agitated. Hoping to diffuse what she believed was an irrational obsession, Amber testified that she called her friend, Io Tillett Wright, on speakerphone, believing that hearing from someone else would end the argument. Instead, she said, Johnny became enraged. According to her testimony, he grabbed the phone, screamed profanities at Io, threw the phone down, and stormed upstairs. Amber testified that as she attempted to explain the situation to Io, he urged her to leave immediately. warning that she was not safe. She said Johnny overheard this, turned around on the stairs, charged back down, and violently grabbed the phone from her hand. According to Amber, he resumed screaming at Io before pulling his arm back and throwing the phone directly at her face, striking her near the eye. She testified that she immediately began crying, telling Johnny he had hit her. According to Amber, he then approached her, mocked her, struck her on the head with his ringed hand, grabbed her by the hair, and yanked her off the couch. She told the jury he pulled her hair back while taunting her, attempting to expose her face as she tried to protect herself. Amber testified that the altercation escalated further when her friend Raquel, who lived in a neighboring apartment, rushed in and positioned herself between them, raising her hands and repeatedly telling Johnny to stop. Amber testified that Johnny pushed past Raquel and continued advancing toward her, prompting Amber to curl up on the couch while Raquel shielded her. Amber told the jury that Johnny continued screaming at her to stand up, growing louder with each demand. Moments later, she testified, Johnny's security team entered the apartment. According to Amber, Johnny then began smashing objects, knocking items off surfaces as he was escorted out, continuing to yell as he moved into the hallway. Amber testified that she was eventually taken to safety by Raquel and her husband, who brought her into their apartment. She said she remained there for hours afterward, shaken and afraid. In the days that followed, Amber sought a temporary protective order. She testified that this decision was not made lightly, but out of fear for her safety. According to Amber, the injuries she presented to the court were real, and the order was necessary to create distance and protection at a moment when she felt vulnerable and exposed. Amber acknowledged that the process quickly became public. Photographs were taken as she exited the courthouse, and images of her face, which seemed to have a bruise on her cheek, circulated widely in the media, including coverage by TMZ. She testified that she did not orchestrate the publicity, and that the attention only compounded the trauma she says she was already experiencing. She told the jury that she was no longer trying to preserve a marriage, but trying to survive it. And it was that experience, she said, that would later inform how she understood herself. Not as a vindictive ex-wife, but as a woman who had lived through abuse and spoke about its aftermath. According to Amber, the period after she sought the temporary protective order was marked by an immediate and overwhelming backlash. She told the jury that almost overnight, she became the focus of intense public scrutiny, ridicule, and hostility, much of it playing out across headlines, social media, and entertainment media. Amber testified that she was accused of lying, exaggerating, and destroying a beloved actor's life. She said strangers sent her threatening messages, mocked her appearance, and called her a fraud. According to Heard, the reaction was not limited to the public. She told the jury that she felt abandoned professionally, questioned privately, and pressured to stay quiet. Amber said that she watched in real time how powerful institutions and fan bases rallied around Johnny Depp. She said she felt outmatched, financially, socially, and culturally, and that speaking out came with consequences she had not anticipated. Rather than being seen as someone seeking protection, she said she was portrayed as vindictive, opportunistic, and malicious. According to Amber, this backlash forced her into silence. She testified that she did not give interviews detailing abuse, did not publish accusations, and did not attempt to tell her story publicly in the years immediately following the divorce. Instead, she said she focused on surviving the fallout, emotionally and professionally, while trying to understand how quickly the narrative had turned against her. It was this experience, Amber told the jury, that stayed with her. Not just what she said happened behind closed doors, but what happened after she sought protection. And it was that experience of backlash, she testified, that would later shape the words she chose when she finally decided to speak. When Amber Heard finally did speak publicly, she told the jury it was not to relitigate her marriage and not to name her abuser, but to describe her experience. The op-ed was published in the Washington Post in December of 2018 under the headline, "I Spoke Up Against Sexual Violence and Faced Our Culture's Wrath. That Has to Change." Amber testified that the piece was written years after the relationship ended and that its focus was not Johnny Depp, But the backlash she says she endured after seeking a restraining order and being publicly associated with abuse allegations. Amber told the jury that she did not name Johnny Depp in the article, did not describe specific incidents, and did not recount details of violence. Instead, she said she wrote about becoming a public figure representing domestic abuse, about speaking up, and about watching institutions protect men accused of abuse. According to her, those statements were rooted in her lived experience, not just of the relationship, but of what followed. She testified that the op-ed was intended as advocacy. She said she wanted to highlight how women who speak out about abuse are often met with disbelief, hostility, and punishment. From her perspective, the article was about social change, not personal vengeance. Amber acknowledged that Johnny believed the statements referred to him, but she told the jury that she did not intend to harm his reputation or career, and that she believed what she wrote was true. According to Amber, the backlash she experienced after the temporary protective order and the power imbalance she says she witnessed afterward made the language she used accurate and justified. This, the defense argued, was the lens through which the jury should view the op-ed, not as a covert accusation, but as a reflection of Amber Heard's experience and beliefs at the time she wrote it. And that distinction mattered, because in a defamation case, the question is not whether the words were controversial, but whether the person who wrote them believed they were true. In addition to Amber's testimony, the defense pointed the jury to additional evidence they argued supported her version of what was happening behind closed doors. They introduced photographs Amber said showed injuries at different points in the relationship. Images she testified were taken in the aftermath of specific arguments. The defense argued that those photos were consistent with what she described: bruising, swelling, and marks that, in her account, were not staged but documented as she lived through it. The jury also heard about communications, texts, and messages the defense argued proved what Amber was saying in real time, not years later in a courtroom. The defense presented exchanges where Amber described conflict, fear, and injuries to people close to her, arguing that those messages supported the idea that she had been reporting abuse privately long before the op-ed was ever published. The defense also relied on witness testimony from people in Amber's orbit, friends and family members who said they observed changes in her demeanor and, at times, saw injuries or the aftermath of volatile confrontations. They testified about what they claimed she told them privately and what they said they personally witnessed in the home environment. And finally, the defense argued that the recordings and other materials introduced at trial supported their broader point, that the relationship was chaotic, that substance use and jealousy were recurring themes, and that Heard's account of fear and control was consistent with the pattern she described, particularly when she testified about incidents she characterized as sexual violence. The defense position was straightforward. Taken together, photos, messages, and corroborating witnesses, this was not a story Heard invented for an op-ed. This, they argued, was why she believed the statements she published were true. In closing arguments, the defense brought the jury back to where the case began. Not with a marriage, but with words. They reminded jurors that this trial was not about deciding whether Johnny Depp and Amber Heard had a toxic relationship. It was not about perfection, mutual pain, or whether either party made mistakes. And it was not about whether the relationship should have ended sooner. The question, they said, was much narrower. Were the statements in the op-ed false? And if they were not false, did Amber Heard believe them to be true when she wrote them? The defense argued that the evidence answered those questions clearly. They argued that truth does not require perfection, memory without flaw, or a single uncontested narrative. It requires belief, grounded in experience. And they told the jury that even if Johnny Depp disagreed with Heard's version of events, disagreement alone does not equal defamation. In the end, the defense asked the jury to consider the weight of what they were being asked to do. To rule against Amber Heard, they would have to conclude not only that her statements were false, but that she did not believe them to be true when she wrote them. And if she believed what she lived, what she experienced, and what she endured, the defense said, then the law protects her right to say so. because they argued defamation law is not designed to punish people for speaking out about abuse. It exists to protect truth, even when that truth is uncomfortable, unpopular, or devastating to hear. They asked that Amber Heard not be silenced for telling her story. After 6 weeks of testimony, hours of recordings, hundreds of exhibits, and two starkly different versions of the same relationship, the case went to the jury. After deliberation, the jury returned a verdict largely in favor of Johnny Depp. They found that all three statements at issue in the op-ed were defamatory, that they referred to him, and that they were made with actual malice. The jury awarded Johnny compensatory and punitive damages. Amber Heard had also filed a counterclaim based on statements made by Johnny's former attorney. For that, the jury reached a mixed verdict, finding one statement defamatory and awarding Amber a smaller sum in damages. The reaction was immediate and global. For Johnny, the verdict was framed as vindication. He released a statement saying the jury had given him his life back and that the truth had finally been heard. Supporters celebrated the outcome as a rejection of false accusations and a restoration of his reputation. For Amber, the verdict was devastating. She said the decision set women back and sent a chilling message to survivors of abuse that speaking out could come at an unbearable cost. She later settled the judgment, maintaining that she stood by her testimony and her belief in what she wrote. The public reaction mirrored the trial itself. Deeply divided, emotionally charged, and relentless. Social media exploded. Careers were dissected. Motives were debated. And long after the jury was dismissed, the arguments continued. A toxic relationship doesn't always have a clear good guy and a bad guy. It's rarely that simple. More often, it's an unhealthy cycle marked by conflict, reconciliation, and the hope that things will get better. When relationships like that unravel, memories are filtered through perception, and moments are colored by emotion. Two people can experience the same event very differently, not because one is lying, but because that is how each received it. That's why it's dangerous to cast a hero and a villain. The truth often lives somewhere in between. The audio and video recordings in this case offered the jury a glimpse into the dysfunction between two people who were once deeply in love. But they were only fragments, snapshots in time, not the full picture of the marriage. They're like the photos taken on a roller coaster, real, distorted by adrenaline, and captured at the most turbulent moment. They don't show the climb, the calm, or why someone chose to get back on again. Those recordings are real, but they only capture a single snapshot at the peak of turbulence. In the end, the verdict reminds us of something fundamental. Juries don't exist to give us moral closure. They exist to answer legal questions with the evidence they are given. The verdict did not declare a winner in a marriage, or determine who suffered more, or who was more flawed. It answered a narrow legal question: whether specific words crossed a legal line. This case was never just about two people. It was about how we interpret evidence, how we assign credibility, and how we reconcile private pain with public narratives. It also highlighted an uncomfortable reality: that women who speak out about abuse are often held to an exceptionally high standard, expected to be flawless in memory and unwavering in their stories in ways others are not. And sometimes, even after a verdict is read, the truth remains complicated. Because in cases like this, the law may have the final say, but the questions it raises don't disappear when the courtroom lights go dark. Thirteenth Juror is an Audiochuck production hosted by Brandy Churchwell. Ashley Flowers is executive producer. You can follow 13th Juror on Instagram at 13th Juror Podcast. I think Chuck would approve.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.